From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello, I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Joel, I'm going to talk about something here that is a source of confusion for an awful lot of amateurs. I hear frequently questions about data rate versus baud rate or signaling rate, and they're not the same, are they?
They generally are not the same.
Generally. Sometimes they can be, but not
that's what's confusing, is because they are the same enough of the time that people tend to use them interchangeably, and that's absolutely not the correct thing to do. So let's start with baud. The word baud is named after the inventor of the teletype code, which was before radio, of course, Jean-Maurice Émile Baudot, B-A-U-D-O-T. And so the baud, which is usually capitalized in honor of Jean-Maurice Émile, is the unit of signaling rate. That means how often do you send signals. Now, if you're sending a binary signal, such as you are with RTTY, where you have either a mark or a space, it turns out the signaling rate and the data rate are the same because there's only one data bit with each signal.
In the terms of RTTY that most hams use, it's what, 45 point something baud? It escapes me at the moment, but
There are a number of different ones in different places. I think amateurs use that, which some people relate to, I think, 100 word per minute.
Yes.
Which depends on how many characters you assume are sent and so forth. But that's not the only thing you can do. And the way it works is if you send more than one bit per signal, then you can have a higher data transfer rate or bit per second data rate than you have baud rate. Now, how would you do that? Well, a good example is to think about signaling to somebody across the room. If you have a system of hand signals, if you have good enough visibility, if you have poor visibility, you may just be able to see whether the person has their right hand or left hand up, and that would be a binary system, and you could send messages that way if you had a code worked out ahead of time. But let's say instead of that, you were close enough together that you could use your fingers. Many times we use fingers for communication of various sorts, but if you're having a coded message, let's say you could put up either 1, 2, 3, or 4 fingers of one hand, and you could pick which ones you're going to use. You could then, if you think about it, if you write down the combinations, you could actually send 2 bits every time you put up your hand, depending on which fingers were up. Mm-hmm. You could send out 2 bits with every signal. So then your data rate would be twice the baud rate.
Now, what would be the baud? When your hand goes up or the...
Well, when the code is sent, which is when your hand goes up with fingers on the end.
Exactly. that would be the baud,
right.
Yes.
And if you wanted to send, instead of 2 bits, 3 bits, you'd have to do another 4. You have to use 2 hands and have a total of 8 fingers, which kind of lines up with some of the usual coding in electronic systems where you have 8-bit words and so forth. But you can go quite a ways with that. In fact, back in the, I think, mainly in the 80s and early 90s, when digital communication was becoming popular, people started to have home computers and they started to use different services. This is before the internet really took off. And well into that time, too, people signed up for Genie email and different kinds of things.
I was one of those people.
Yeah. There were a number of things you could do with a modem connected to your computer, and lots of times the speed that you could transact business in those environments was limited by what you could do over the modem.
Yes.
And that became particularly acute when the internet started to get popular, and people who did not have broadband connections were limited by what their modem could do. And the modem manufacturers saw this as an opportunity, and they spent a lot of time developing clever coding schemes that would use multiple amplitudes and multiple phases to be able to send multiple bits per signal, because the phone line could handle at most about 1,200 baud, sometimes 300 baud, but some could go 1,200 baud. And the idea was by sending these multiple coding arrangements with each signal, you could actually get a data rate of, and this went up a little bit every year kind of thing, and we had doorstops of modems for a long time. You'd get one, you'd just get it going, and they'd have one twice as fast the next month.
That's right, yes.
And so we have a basement full of those. It kind of topped out at about 56 kilobits per second. So on this 1,200 baud signaling over a phone line, we're getting 56,000 bits per second. Now, the problem with that is that was the maximum it could do. And what they, in the fine print, it said, well, if the signal-to-noise ratio is not high enough, so you can't tell the difference between four fingers and one hand, we're going to automatically drop back, and that's what they would do. So you bought this 56K modem, and if you were at the end of a rural phone line that had a lot of noise, it might not work that much faster than your last modem. But, of course, you didn't know that. You paid for 56K, and you thought you were getting it, and everything seemed to be working.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of part of the deal. But that's the difference. So the baud, and it's, and by the way, it's baud is the unit. So it 1,200 baud. Okay, it's not baud per second. It's baud.
Just baud.
Just baud.
Just as, baud.
As in knots means nautical miles per second. You don't say knots per second. You say knots. So you say baud. And then the data rate or data transfer rate is in usually bits per second.
Yes.
Or some multiple thereof when you get into the higher speed services. So that's the difference between baud and signaling rate.
You know, what you were talking about, the modems, that brings up, for example, in amateur radio applications, one thing that comes to mind is PACTOR, specifically PACTOR 3. And it's very similar because the baud rate under the current FCC rules that we're allowed to use on the HF bands, the maximum baud is 300 baud. And yet, PACTOR 3, in terms of bit rate, is able to do quite a bit, and again, I don't recall the actual maximum bit rate that it's able to do, but it's in the thousands of bits per second. By using exactly what you said, those unusual schemes of using phase and amplitude shift and that sort of thing, to basically squeeze a higher bit rate into just this 300 baud rate.
Indeed. And there are systems like that all over, and they probably all have some mechanism by which they throttle back if conditions don't warrant, because you do need to usually have a very high signal-to-noise ratio to be able to tell the difference between all the different states that are almost the same, but just slightly different amplitude, slightly different phase. They'd call them constellations, and you'd plot them on a two-axis system, and you'd have dots all over the place, and just a little bit of change in phase, a little bit of change in amplitude, and you're in the next signal.
So, oh, yeah. In fact, PACTOR does exactly that. It will throttle back, if you will, if conditions just don't support the optimum. There was a mode called Clover that you might remember from a number of years ago. Hams used it for a time. They really don't anymore, but it also used that same technique of switching modes depending on the analysis of the received signal, what it thought the path would support. And it would even back the power down or increase power, depending. And that was a pretty cool system at the time.
An interesting aspect of the throttling back process is that it works best in the full duplex arrangement, in that which telephone modems can do. Telephone modems can transmit in each direction at the same time, while hams can't. So with a telephone modem system, the modems can send service messages back and forth saying, oops, throttle back, and the transmit end then can throttle back instantly. With
That's right.
amateur communication, you can't usually do that. Very few amateur systems run full duplex. I can't think of any offhand, but I'm sure there are some.
No.
You're allowed to do it, it's just that we don't do it generally. So what that means is if there's a need to throttle back, I won't know about it until I've finished with the transmission. And what that implies is that transmission probably didn't get through without errors because the signal-to-noise ratio wasn't high enough. So now I not only have to say throttle back, I also have to say, oh, send that message again.
Send it again, yeah.
So therefore, I've got a efficiency problem in the effective data rate is reduced because if you have to send everything twice, it's half as long or half as fast.
Exactly.
So that kind of goes on, and it's kind of a trade-off between short messages and that if you have to send it again, it isn't so long to send again, but you have to spend the time between messages handshaking to say what happened.
Yes.
Or long messages that with very little overhead, and if they get through, you get a very efficient use of the channel, but if they don't get through and you have to resend them, you have to resend the whole message. So that can be a problem. And there are some systems that are more clever than that that do forward error correction, which is to say that they encode the message in such a way that if you receive it, you can tell there was an error, and you can also tell what the error was. And if you know what the error was, you can correct it. Mm-hmm. So forward error correction is very commonly used on half-duplex systems. I don't know if they're built into the ones you're talking about or not, but they were very popular with satellite systems where there's a very long delay, and if you have to retransmit with the satellite system, it can be a big chunk of wasted bandwidth.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of different ways of doing that, but the problem is not trivial, so it's worth thinking about if you're designing a system that make sure you take all this into account.
What about the relationship, Joel, between, getting back to baud for a moment, between baud and bandwidth? I'm thinking of HF in particular, since bandwidth is at a premium on those frequencies.
Well, in the telephone modem case, the modem designer had to design the system that would fit within the 3,000 hertz bandwidth of the typical toll-quality phone line. So, and that's the same bandwidth that the 300 bit per second early modems took, or the 1,200 bit per second. So with that coding, those coding schemes, they had to work within the same bandwidth. Now, I don't know that's necessarily the case with amateur transmission. There are requirements about bandwidth that have to do with efficient use of the spectrum and good engineering practice, and that may imply similar kinds of things. But I don't think you have the same, you certainly don't have the same hardware restriction that you have with a phone line, where the phone line, the phone line itself, of course, doesn't have bandwidth limiting per se, but what happens is you get to a digital switching system, and there it's band limited, and you have a very tight band limiting kind of thing, so you don't get errors in the digital to analog to digital process. So you're restricted to the 3,000 hertz bandwidth. So it can be done. I don't know enough about the details of the amateur systems to know if they also do that. But there's nothing magic about that. Well, I guess there is in a way. If you're sending it over a single sideband system, you can't really necessarily control the bandwidth of the signal of the receiver at the other end. You could send a wideband signal, but if somebody's got a 2,100 hertz wide filter, that's all they're going to get.
That's right.
So if you want them to be able to receive you on a standard sideband transceiver, you pretty much have to stay within the bandwidth, and that's even narrower than the phone company provides.
Well, below 10 meters, as the rules are presently written, we're limited to 300 baud signals. Is that a function of bandwidth? Is that the reason for the limitation? In other words, if you ran a 1,200 baud signal on 20 meters, would it be necessarily wider than a 300 baud?
Probably. But again, if you ran it through a sideband transmitter, you'd get out what...
Yes, well, yeah, that's true.
So I think that's the intent, and they could have worded it differently. They could have said it must fit within the bandwidth of a... Now, the data modes are in the CW band, must fit within the bandwidth of a CW signal. Of course, that isn't exactly defined either. If you look at the product reviews of the bandwidth of CW signals as transmitted, they vary considerably, and people are putting more and more focus on the narrowing that to close to what it should be. But the idea is, I think, that they be comparable so that the data signal doesn't take up multiple CW channels.
Exactly. No, that makes perfect sense. All right, Joel, I have a question for you. Jack, WA4PVZ, he asks, from time to time, our single sideband net frequency suffers from interference from an AM station that's more than 10 kilohertz above our 15-meter frequency. When I asked the operators about this, they said they were operating in compliance with regulations. I thought AM stations were supposed to be within a 6 kilohertz bandwidth. What's the story here?
Good question, and there really is no number in the regulations, or what's supposed to be. A AM station can be within 6 kilohertz if they... limit their bandwidth. But if you think about it, the typical telephone channel is wider than that. The audio from a telephone channel, a telephone channel goes from 300 to 3,300 hertz. And on a double sideband AM channel, that would be 6.6 kilohertz of bandwidth if you were restricted to that. The actual FCC rule is, it's 97.307A, if anybody wants to look it up, no amateur station transmission shall occupy more bandwidth than necessary for the information rate and emission type being transmitted in accordance with good amateur practice. There's a lot of caveats there. And I guess the thing is, what's good amateur practice in an AM transmitter? Well, a single sideband transmitter is, in most cases, other than the phasing type, which aren't used very often but still encountered, are bandwidth limited by the sideband filter.
Yes.
So you sort of, you know, that's the bandwidth you have, not quite a brick wall, but depending on the kind of filter it is, a fairly sharp filtering that restricts the bandwidth. AM transmitters, by the engineering practice of the time that they were built, tended not to have that. They may have some filtering, some bandwidth limiting in the amplifier stages and so forth, but the bandwidth is pretty much twice the highest frequency that talks into the microphone, if it's working right. And like most things, particularly amateur things, particularly 1950s amateur things, if that's what they're using, may not actually be working exactly right, and you'll get the kind of intermodulation distortion that we experience on single sideband also. So you'll get a little wider spectrum. It's important to note that generally that kind of a signal is down considerably from the main part of the AM signal. So the AM signal might be 3 or 4 kilohertz wide on either side, so it's, say, 8 kilohertz wide for most of the audio, but unless you have a very high-pitched voice, chances are that's about as wide as it's going to be.
Yes.
But there will be products that will extend beyond that just by the nature of limitations that happen. So the AM transmitter is not as well-defined in terms of bandwidth as we're used to in single sideband. And the telcos defined, it was actually Bell Labs, I don't know what year, a long, long time ago, defined what toll quality bandwidth was as being a 3,000 hertz bandwidth going from 300 to 3,300. And that's been sort of the standard for much more than 100 years. And you have to keep in mind, that was something that was put together by what I envision as a bunch of gray-haired old men sitting around talking about it and talking into microphones and experimenting. Now, one of the things we know about them is, A, their hearing is probably not as high-frequency sensitive as younger people, and B, they tended to have lower voices than younger people. So if you've ever talked to your 7-year-old granddaughter on the phone on a typical voice call, you may say, gee, that doesn't sound like voice quality to me because I can't hear her. So that's kind of an issue. So it was kind of arbitrary, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So that 3,000 hertz bandwidth number is arbitrary to begin with. There's nothing built into the typical AM ham transmitter that makes it want to stay within that band. Now, that's not true of a modern transceiver that starts out as a single sideband transceiver and uses digital signal processing to make an AM waveform.
Yeah.
That will have the band limiting that's designed into it. So it can be, but I'm saying if you have a Viking 2 like I do, you sort of get what you get. Now, there's other things about this to take into account. Another thing is when you say that the station is 10 kilohertz above your 15-meter net frequency, keep in mind, you're operating upper sideband. So when you look at your VFO is not actually where your signal is. It's where your carrier would be if it weren't suppressed. Your signal extends from the frequency noted on your VFO up to 2.5 kilohertz, let's say, above that frequency. So the 10 kilohertz you think you have really may be more like 7.5 kilohertz, because the double sideband signal that you, when you tune to his frequency, you'll probably be measuring his carrier frequency. So the space between your carrier frequency and his carrier frequency can be 10 kilohertz, but the distance between the top of your signal and the bottom of his is a lot smaller than that. So keep in mind what you're measuring when you look at that. So it's probably not really 10 kilohertz. That's probably not a fair measure.
So is it fair to say that these guys were probably compliant?
There's nothing specifically in the rules that says that they weren't. Now, so some hams that are very proud of having a signal that sounds like a broadcast. Well, broadcast transmitters are allocated a channel that is 10 kilohertz wide. That's the good news. The bad news is some broadcast stations, because there's nobody else in the adjacent channels, typically run twice as wide as that. If nobody complains, they can send hi-fi out of those transmitters. So broadcast stations can be quite wide. I'm not sure that there's good engineering practice that implies that a ham station should try to be that wide. But on the other hand, the signal that they put out will still only be twice as high as the frequency that goes into the microphone. So having a hi-fi capable transmitter, and as long as you don't play the violin on it, which we're not allowed to do, it's hard to imagine that you would have signals much wider than plus or minus 4 kilohertz, something like that. So that's the typical arrangement that you'll find. So again, you have to take into account that even though the person is operating within that band, the transmitter itself, based on the good engineering practice at the time it was built, may put out spurious signals. So what it comes down to, I guess, is, and I'm not an expert on this aspect of it, but I think that who's ever there first has the frequency. And even though you have a scheduled net, if somebody's there, you need to move so your signals don't interfere with them and their signals don't interfere with you. And if you're there first, they should operate the same way. And if they have a wider than usual signal and it's interfering with you, they should move.
Yeah, so, common courtesy would, dictate that.
And the rules. I mean, the FCC will enforce that if necessary. It's a little hard to tell whether they're exactly in the rules or not. But there are other rules that come into account that don't have to do with bandwidth, that have to do with channel occupancy.
Exactly.
So keep those in mind.
Thank you, Joel.
My pleasure.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.